You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right, let's go. Hello and welcome back to the Big Strong Leicester Boys podcast. So, thank you very much indeed for coming back and listening as always. So, a big win in the cup at the weekend away at Millwall into the hat. By the time you listen to this, you may well know who we're going to be playing in the next round. We'll talk about Millwall very, very shortly, and then we'll look ahead to that huge game against Coventry up next. So we've got Jordan, we've got Rick, no Jack today. We have got a guest joining us very, very shortly. We've got Josh Holland from football.london, a football reporter, scout for QPR, or academy scout, and a big Leicester fan as well. So Josh is going to join us about 5 or 10 minutes time, of course, with the January transfer window now open. Thought it'd be a good time to get him on. Especially with Jack missing today. But we'll come up to Rick. How are you, mate? I mean, January transfer window. Ricky, are you slightly offended here? Because you were first introduced to the podcast a year ago as our transfer expert and our scout. But that feels like years ago, doesn't it?
It does, and it's a brutal industry, mate. You only get one or two chances, and I obviously flopped massively. But no, I enjoyed it last year, but it's always been a bit of a tongue-in-cheek with me. My scouting technique is literally a Google a player, look at a couple of stats, watch a couple of YouTube videos, and then that's me done. So, it'd be good to get Josh's appropriate and detailed and well-researched thoughts. But, I'm all right. Enjoyed yesterday's game. Nice to rotate and get the win. We'll come on to that. But yeah, no, I'm all good, thank you.
Was I right in the description of Josh's many work titles? So a reporter, writer for football.london and an academy scout for QPR, yeah?
Correct, yeah. And then obviously big Leicester fan. That's his number one passion.
Okay, brilliant. So Josh to join us very shortly. Also, we'll be trialling a new game today here on this week's episode. So who are you? I don't know if it's gone forever, but it's been stood down at least for this week. We got fed up of Rick winning every week. So we put it out there, didn't we, last week on the podcast to the listeners to see if anyone could come up with a new game. And we did. So it was Keith Miguel, or at KeithKeith83, came up, Jordan, with the game. Where did you come from? Where did you go? And Keith's suggestion was that we play Cotton Eye Joe as the theme tune, and we have to name where they signed from and where did they go after City. So, Jordan, mate, we're going to be trialing this today. We know what a wonderfully brilliant record you had at Who Are You? Is this your game? How do we feel about this one? I'm excited.
I might have half a chance, but like I've said before, my one win on Who Are You was better than all of your wins put together, Rick.
It predated me as well.
Well, it's like when Leicester won the league.
Even playing.
When we won the league,
which one was it, by the way?
No one else remembers it, mate. Just Jordan.
It was Dean Sturridge.
Oh, okay. Right. Class, mate. That's a class one. Yeah, fair one.
Lived off it for a year.
Yeah, but you know, I'll live off Leicester's title for the rest of my life. It's no different to me.
Yeah, but we all do. So, where did you come from? Where did you go? As we said, we're trialing it today. We might change it next week in terms of how the game worked exactly. But Jordan, I think a positive about the rules that we're going to play today is that we can all win. So we'll play our intro music and obviously introduce the game. We'll let everyone know who's going to be Quizmaster. That Quizmaster then gives the clues in terms of obviously where they went and where they came from, where they went. And they can maybe give some years if it's a particularly hard one. And then we play the music, which is just 15 seconds long. And everyone has then got those 15 seconds to come up with their answer. And so it means that everyone could win.
How do we reveal it, do you reckon?
We can write it down and put it on a piece of paper and all show it at the same time, or we put it in the chat here that everyone's got 15 seconds to, well, obviously not to put it in within the 15 seconds, but at the end of the 15 seconds to put the answer in. But it requires a lot of trust there, I think, in that way, doesn't it?
Because you could. Jack will be very dismissive as you know what he's going to be like.
He'll be handing out bands left, right, and centre. So maybe we write it down and we've all got to show that piece of paper.
Yeah.
So there's going to be no change of at the end of that 15 seconds. But look, again, you know, put it out there because I think the listeners probably a lot better at this than us. If you can think of a better way of doing it, then let us know. But Jordan, you were there with me at Millwall at the weekend. What did you make of it? I thought it was a strange first half, quite bizarre in some ways that we were 2-0 up because I thought that Millwall were actually the better team in the first half. But we were very, very clinical. You know, of course, you can never take that away from anyone. And I actually really enjoyed the second half. I thought we played some good stuff I did in the end enjoy it, but yeah, it's a bit of a strange place to go at the best of times, isn't it, Millwall?
Yeah, I've got a few points about yesterday. Firstly, about the performance, I was pleased that all that matters is getting in the next round when it comes to the cup. Pleased for Cassidy. I think I said last week that I think he gets a lot of unfair criticism, and I think he's been made a bit of a scapegoat. Lovely header at the back post. I think it was Sharkey who put the ball in.
It was.
Which is not a surprise.
It's a superb cross.
Yeah.
It is. We mentioned the back end of last week, didn't we, that maybe surprised he hasn't played a little bit more. And look, again, you know, we know his role within the squad. But yeah, if you give Mark Albrighton that much time to put in a cross, he can be 50 years old. He'll still find you at the back post. It was a great cross from him. But yeah, no, good shout for Cassidy. I think it was man of the match, actually, George.
That's good. That's good to hear.
Particularly from the club account I saw, anyway.
Yeah, and it was a powerful header. It was a good header as well. And then the second goal, lovely cushioned pass with his left foot into the path for Ricardo. Good finish. Like you said, Jake, I think they were probably the better side. They probably had the better chances. I thought the keeper was good, made some good saves at the right times. And then, yeah, second half, again, we were probably the better team. And weirdly, we were talking about Justin and Doyle and what they both bring. I think we said Doyle loves that crossfield pass. And about 20 seconds later, he's just drilled one over the top into Callan's path. Took it really well. I watched it earlier, actually. Mm. When he went around the keeper, I just thought, yeah, just stick it in then, pal. But looking back, it was on the edge of the box. And it wasn't easy, was it?
Yeah.
And again, same as the week before, Callan looks like a real decent signing to me. He looks like a proper striker. I think he's got everything. And he could be one for next season. The only negative, which Rick will probably pick up on, is conceded from set pieces. Again, which it needs sorting out. It's been far too long. Obviously, I'm a Rodgers fanboy, as everyone seems to think, but he couldn't sort it, and neither can Enzo. So, you know, where does the book stop with set pieces? I mean, I went toilet, so I'll quickly go to the bog, and then we can nip out before we get penned in. Went to the bog, and they'd scored, and then the bloke said, "Oh, it's set piece again," and then obviously we got penned in. But yeah, we're through. It's all that matters. But my other point is, the FA Cup's on its arse. It's fucking terrible. Got there, you know, two of their upper tier, the side on the left, which is normally the side which is a bit rowdy, and the cold blow and beyond the goal. No one in the upper tier. They sold about 6,000 and we sold 3,500. Even our end was a bit empty. And then, you know, wider than that, I mean, you look around the grounds, Man City versus Huddersfield on the TV. What's the fucking point? What is the fucking point of that? I just think the cup's on its arse, and the rules, you've got VAR in some games and not the others. You've got replays coming in round five. I just think, honestly, I didn't really enjoy it, but it wasn't that we didn't play well or win. I just thought this is the FA Cup round three. It used to be the best day on the footballing calendar, and yesterday was like a pre-season friendly. And I think it's just a real sad indictment of the way that modern football's gone. And I don't know, what do you say about it?
Yeah, we had this chat, didn't we, in the pub beforehand. I think there was three non-league teams in the third round, but not one of them got a TV fixture. And, you know, you look through the games which ITV and the BBC picked out, the large majority of them were all Premier League ties. And look, you know, to be fair, Jordan, we both work in the industry, you know, and I've been involved in conversations in terms of, you know, the games in which channels pick and which game we're going to pick. And the reality is that we all pick, and we have to pick. I mean, it'd be madness not to pick the ones that are going to get the most numbers. And was it Spurs Burnley?
Yeah.
But as crap in terms of, you know, I don't know if crap's the right word, but as uninspiring in terms of a cup game as that may well be, a Spurs game against Burnley will get more viewers than Maidstone against a Championship or another Premier League team, just because they haven't got two Premier League teams. And it is frustrating as a neutral when you have those conversations. But I think the reality is that it's not that the TV companies don't get it, because people say, "Oh, why are they picking those games?" Well, they just don't get it. You know, there's the magic of the FA Cup. Well, no, they've got their bosses, and their bosses are that they've got to hit certain numbers, and that's why they pick those games. But you know what I think we were saying was that if you're a non-league team and you get to the first round or the third round, it should be a rule, an obligation that you're either at home, or so you get a better chance of going through, or you're on TV to get some cash. But it's difficult to see how that can ever change. But I mean, I share your frustration. I really do, because, you know, I love the FA Cup. I really do. But I didn't watch any of the games this weekend, honestly and truly, because there weren't any of those non-league games. I'm not going to watch Spurs against Burnley. I'm just not bothered.
No, and Palace Everton was on. Tottenham, Burnley, like I said, the Man City, Huddersfield. We went to the pub after our game this morning and put the snooker on. Rather watch the snooker than Man City, Huddersfield. Yeah. You know what's going to happen.
Exactly.
And my mate's a Sheffield Wednesday fan. He lives in London. And he spends a lot of money. He's a season ticket holder at Hillsborough. And I said, are you going up today? And he said, you should be banned playing teams from your league at home in the cup. He said, you just shouldn't. He said, I'm not wasting my money on that. And it really frustrated me yesterday. And it wasn't anything to do with the performance, and, you know, we didn't make that many changes and we still played quite well and got through. But just like, even like getting to the ground, like, you know, we went out at half time and there was a bit of music on and people having a few beers. I thought, this is better than the football. Like, how's that even possible? Yeah. And, you know, I thought Millwall fans would be well up for it. Obviously, last time they knocked us out in 2017 when we were champions. And I could tell as soon as I got in, I saw the upper tier where it was empty, and I thought, these don't fancy it, so we're going to win anyway. And it's just, I don't know, you know, you say the TV companies make those decisions. Well, you know, Maidstone won yesterday, and Eastleigh drew at Newport, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
They should have been 5:30, 12:30, 5:30, both on TV. And, you know, fuck your ratings. because it's more important. It's more. This cup will die in 10 years if it stays as it is, I think. Mm. And we're the only country, I think, that have two cup competitions anyway. So one of them, I mean, the EFL Cup is a mess as well. They're both like, they don't know what they're doing, either cup. They're both, like the FA Cup, like I say, you have replays or you don't. It's one or the other. Mm. You have the AR or you don't. Like, what's distinguishing both cups? They're both the same and they're both shit.
Yeah, lots of opinions. I'm trying to pick which one to go out there. The Thomas Frank has taken a little bit of stick because he's complained about the fact they've now got to do a cup replay against Wolves. And look, you know, you can understand why neither Brentford or Wolves want that replay. But I think somebody pointed out, I think it was 7 years ago, that Brentford were in serious financial trouble and they got a draw maybe against Man United, against someone, and they got £500,000. Which effectively, you know, not saved them, but helped them out massively at the time. And you know, it's how short people's memories are sometimes when you know these managers complain about cup replays and say, well, look, you know, they're not for you. It's for the other team. You know, for the extra revenue. But one thing I saw actually was a tweet from Charlie Baker. I'll credit him, the comedian, but TalkSport presenter. He said, and I thought it was actually quite a good one, that the cup replays. The two teams can just decide beforehand. But say, for instance, if it's a non-league team against a Premier League team, you can decide between the two teams, we want a replay. But if you're two Premier League teams, you can say, this is decided today. I don't know. It was just something I read. And yeah.
And you know, like the Brentford thing, well, Wolves had 10 men. But all these managers moan about the amount of games they've got to play. And then they pick a weakened team and have a replay and fucking moan about that. Mm. Well, pick your strongest team and win then. Mm. Then that avoids your replay. So it's your own fault. It's just, I'm in a bit of an arse with it, with the cup. And we've won it, so fuck it. I don't care anymore. We've won it.
Right, I think Josh Holland is now with us. Josh, if you're able to come on, mate, do say hello. Yeah, we've got Josh Holland. Hello, mate. How are we doing?
I'm good, thank you, mate. How are you? Hi, Jordan. You okay, mate?
I'm good, mate. You just had to listen to me whinge about the FA Cup for 5 minutes.
you've just saved us. So this is Josh Holland here from football.london and also Academy Scout for QPR as well, a massive City fan. So, Josh, we've decided that Rick used to be our transfer expert, but he's just had to pop off, but he'll be back shortly. He's going to throw some names at you and hopefully get your expert take and view on some players. But were you at a game this weekend, by the way, working or as a fan at City?
Yeah, I was at the City's under-18s against Chelsea yesterday morning at Seagrave. So I missed our FA Cup game against Millwall, but I had running commentary from a few mates saying that we were getting battered. I was at the under-18s. It was quite a good game. My first one for QPR, so it was good to see what level of football the under-18s are at. And to be fair to the Leicester lads, they did all right because Chelsea have obviously renowned for such a good academy. I thought Leicester stood up well and they lost to Chelsea a few weeks ago in the FA Youth Cup. But as you saw yesterday, Chelsea put on a midfielder in their team from the under-18, so they're missing him.
So potentially, Josh, could you be taking some or scouting some players for QPR from Leicester's academy? Is that how it's going to work?
Kind of, but it kind of depends. the problem with QPR, without going in the ins and outs of, and then the aim that I think my job is just to find people who, when they don't get a contract with an elite Cat 1 academy, QPR, and we've got a good database of them players. So there'll be certain players in that Chelsea team who will go on and play for Chelsea or maybe a bigger team than QPR, but there'll be some in the Leicester team who probably won't go the full way and do a kid in Dewsbury Hall and get released. And then that's where QPR come in. I think they're in category two. So they're kind of just picking up the scrap from the top teams. I think it's fair to say the future is pretty bright for us. I was quite impressed.
Yeah, just another kind of like career chat. In terms of the academy and youth side of things, I know it's something that Rick's really keen on. He's always talking and telling us about, you know, certain players in the setup which he really rates. Is that something that you specifically wanted to move into?
Yeah, I think before I did journalism, I did my coaching badges, and I was always wanting to go into coaching. And then obviously I'm at Football London now, and I was kind of finding myself only working one day at the weekend and then either going to the city. I have a shared season ticket with my brother, so we rotate. And it's always been something I've wanted to get into, but COVID and then buying a house and moving in is kind of restricted it. But now I've got the time, I thought after Christmas I'll give it a go. And luckily I got in touch with someone at QPR who were looking for someone in the Midlands. So I thought it's not really the kind of thing I was hoping for, academy scout, after a few weeks of doing it. But I'm quite fortunate of getting to watch so many football games, as well as working from home and writing about football. I'm pretty privileged.
I'm super intrigued by the academy side of things. I think I've seen like videos and stuff on this before, but I'm sure that scouts and clubs do it all completely differently. But do you literally just sit there and watch all the games, and you've got like a document there in front of you, and you're grading players on certain attributes, or you know, is there certain things you're asked to kind of specifically look out for?
Yes and no to all of them, to be fair. Sorry if you hear my dogs, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's fine, mate.
So basically I went there with a little notepad intending to write all my notes on there. And I got there, I realized very quickly I weren't going to be able to do that. So I used my phone and just literally wrote the whole lineups of both teams. And whenever someone did something, I thought, oh, that's quite good, I just noted it down. And then you get 2 days to put your reports onto our system. So I did that this morning, and it takes about 2 hours. But you're looking, you kind of want to judge them on there, how they are on the ball, how they are off the ball, and then what they're like when something goes wrong. And obviously, because they were, most of them are 17, some 16, some 18, their social side and psychological side is quite important. So for instance, I'm not going to name him, but there was a Leicester player who gave a foul on the halfway line and told the ref to, I don't know if I can swear, but he told the ref to F off.
Yeah, it's fine.
So I noted that down, not to as a negative, but it was just something that I've noticed, and he kind of got to him a little bit as the game went on. But there's different things. Obviously, as a defender, there's a guy called Bobby Amati. I don't know if you've ever heard of him or spoke about him. I heard a few good things about him on Fox's Talk, and I was impressed with him, and he's a solid defender. I think he played midfield before, actually. So with him, it was more for the physical side, how he's on the ball. He's taller than a lot of players in that system that Leicester play in. So he was the main threat from set pieces. So it's a load of little things that you kind of have to note down in your mind and then write down. And then you're meant to watch them 5 times before then having a good judgment of them, because there could be one player who was impressive yesterday, and then I go watch them again in 2 weeks and he could have a stinker. So it varies. It varies. And yeah, you get a good idea of what QPR, like I've been given a nice list of what things that they're to look out for, but they're more focused on their first team recruitment this window at the minute.
Yeah. I mean, physical attributes as well for a youngster is always a super interesting one, isn't it? Because you can look at a 16-year-old who's already physically built as an adult, and another 16-year-old just aren't. So you know that 16-year-old who's physically built, you know, say for instance if he's playing as a striker, a big striker, he's going to bully, you know, a 16-year-old defender who perhaps hasn't physically developed it. But sometimes it's your job, isn't it, to be able to look beyond that and say, okay, well, you know, beyond that physicality, are they going to develop into, you know, a better footballer, which is ultimately the aim, isn't it, when they get to kind of 18, 19 and they need to be playing first team men's football?
Yeah, of course. And I think we've seen it in recent generations of football, people like David Silva, Lionel Messi, even looking at the Leicester team, people like Abdul Fattah, who's very small, very slim, but he's a very good footballer. And I think a few decades ago, if you were seen small, you probably wouldn't have made it.
I can guarantee every single person listening to this podcast has got a mate who says they got released by academy because they were too small.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, a lot of players who you could probably think of who you've heard, I think it happened with Harry Kane at Arsenal, something to do with his height. And then he went to Spurs and obviously did what he did. But yeah, the physical traits is the main most important thing. Technical traits, I think anyone can go and spot talent. It's not, if you see a good player, you know a good player. Like Will Alves, for example, we all knew when we seen him under Brendan Rodgers how good of a player he was when he made his small appearances. But yeah, you are right. I think if a player can be physical on the pitch against people who were maybe, you get a lot of 16-year-olds who were built very impressively. And Chelsea have a winger who was only 16, and he was, I've never seen anything like it, the way he, how powerful he was on the ball. So yeah, a lot of the game now is going on technical and physical more than height and the frame and the build of the player. So yeah, you bang on with that.
Josh, I think I had the shortest scouting career ever. I used to work for Chesterfield, my first kind of big job or like breakthrough job as a journalist. And the scout there said, Paul Mitchell, his name was, said, oh, can you nip down to King Power? This lad, you know, we keep an eye on this lad. Can you nip down there and watch him? And I got there and he weren't playing. Just turned around and went straight home. And that was it. That was as far as my scouting career went. But I did my dissertation.
Sorry, Jordan, is this the Paul Mitchell who, if you ever play Football Manager, he's like the highest rated guy and everything, isn't he? There is one, isn't there? But there is, isn't there, a Paul Mitchell?
Yeah. I feel like one was maybe at Tottenham. No, this is different Mitch. Yeah. But I did my dissertation on it because it was interesting what you said about the psychological side for me, because I had like one of my mates was at Leicester and would have been late 2000s maybe. And he was best player I've ever seen. Like he was, you know, the kid in the schoolyard who would have the ball and 10 people would be chasing him. And you just couldn't get it off him. And I think he could have made it really, but he didn't. And then he went off the rails a bit and, you know, he wasn't ashamed to admit that. But because I found it interesting, I mean, this was going way back, but it's something like 1% of academy players, if that, make it to the first team. And you think that, I mean, that's pretty staggering, the amount of kids that you get through academies. And like you mentioned Dewsbury Hall, I think Leicester are pretty good at that, more than the others. Maybe we've got 4 or 5 that have come through in the last few years, which I think is pretty good. But I don't know, you've not been at QPR too long. Is that their remit now to get like that pathway into the first team?
I imagine so. I know that a lot of, if you look at QPR, because QPR came up with us, didn't they, when we won the championship. And since then, it's obviously been a disaster for them. So I know that they changed some things in their recruitment in the summer. I've got to go down next Saturday to meet everyone, so I don't know the ins and outs of everything. But I think every club would like to have a pathway into the first team for the academy players. I know that they had two debuts against Bournemouth in the FA Cup yesterday. One lad who they got from Tottenham in the summer after he got released, and then another academy lad. So it's difficult because when you're a team of that size and you're facing relegation to League One, you probably can't risk throwing in an academy lad when you're playing Rotherham at home, where we're quite privileged, where we can play Rotherham in the third game of the season and start Casey McAteer and he can come up with what he came up with. So it's obviously different circumstances with different clubs. But I think QPR will obviously want the right people. It's a bit cliche, but I think, every club probably wants that. They don't want to be signing people who are a bad egg, bad attitude, not very nice with officials, etc. So I imagine that, because every scout gets taught the same thing, and when you're doing the FA Talent ID Level 1, that like 1% of players make it to the first team. But one thing to remember is that they may, only 1% may only make it to the first team of that club, but a lot percentage will go on and make their senior debut for another club. So I think the way that the English scout coaching DNA has been formed over the last few years, we've seen it with England and the under-21s and all that. So it's kind of filtering down into the rest of the clubs, and different clubs get success. Some clubs just can't get it right.
Yeah. I mean, it's good that you referenced England, because obviously I'll be happy with that. But I think it was Dan Ashworth, was it? The blueprint of the DNA or the blueprint of English football. And that was 2012, maybe. But he came up with this DNA of what an English footballer should be. And I think now, like you say, we're really reaping the rewards. You look at the players that come through and play for England now, and technically they're best players in the world. And you'd never have thought an English player would play like that a few years ago. Like you said, it'd all be more like physical attributes. But it must be difficult for QPR as well, because all these bigger clubs in London have got these Cat 1 academies, and they're fighting, like you say, fighting for the scraps as well. So it must be tough. But I think Leicester have been really good at that in the last few years. Like, you know, Luke Thomas gets a lot of stick, but with the FFP rules now, even if you can shift your academy players on, it's just all pure profit. So I think we've been pretty good at that.
I think as well, with some clubs like Chelsea and Conor Gallagher's are perfect examples. if you sell a homegrown player, you get away with financial fair play punishment in some manner because he counts as a homegrown player. So we were fortunate with Harvey Barnes in the summer. We probably would have sold Hamza in the summer if we didn't go down as well. You are right with QPR. It is difficult. They're probably the worst city to be coming from when it comes to homegrown talent because there's so many. You've got people like Chelsea, Arsenal. Fulham are quite good at snapping up the local talent. And as you've seen with Palace as well, Palace are very good. But Palace seem to do it where they sign young players from clubs before they mature. So I know they got Eze. I know he came and he started for QPR and he was doing really good, but he wasn't at this top game and he's now probably worth triple what they paid for him. So different clubs running different ways. I know that you guys have all had your says on how Leicester run with Rudkin and that. I know that different clubs can run in different ways.
But no, it's a good time though to have that chat, particularly if you look at that team at the weekend. You know, what if you go through it all? You know, Stolarczyk, Ben Nelson, Wanya Marcel, Hamza, Keenan was there. Rick, is it Maswin High? How would you say the
Maswinise?
Maswinise. That sounds loads better than what I was about to say. He made his debut as well.
He still looks the same age as when he came through and was randomly on the bench under Rodgers 3 years ago. But yeah. I thought he showed some nice touches. But yeah, sorry about that, boys. Daughter just woke up screaming at a right nightmare. But I'm still not out of the woods yet. I think she might still be awake, but the show must go on.
We've been quizzing Josh about his job as an academy scout.
Oh, have you? Brilliant. That's what I wanted to do.
We've not really spoke about kind of like the January transfer window in terms of, you know, Leicester. We haven't thrown any players at him. And we haven't really spoke about kind of his Leicester supporting kind of life as well. So, Rick, maybe if you want to take it up from there with them.
I mean, as a lot of people know, I was brought onto this podcast as some sort of transfer expert, and I quickly got found out with some horrendous picks. But we obviously need a number eight, don't we? We're Wilf out for potentially 3 months. Bit concerning with what's coming out from Maresca's press conference that we've got to sell before we buy. We've heard that before, haven't we? Jordan Blackwell did an article in the Mercury last week that suggests that maybe we didn't think we'd be in that position, i.e. Maresca thought that we had funds to buy, and maybe that's now not the case. So, yeah, we need one in. I mean, have you got any thoughts? I know you scout for the academy at QPR and whatnot, and I think you're down at Seagrove tomorrow, if that's allowed to be announced. If not, we'll dub it out. But, whatever thoughts you've got, mate, I've got a few names to throw at you.
Well, it's difficult because I write for Football London, where that's covering Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs. So, and I used to do the Leicester Mercury a few years ago. So my whole time would revolve around writing about Leicester. But now it's difficult because I'm writing about Ivan Toney a lot and Osimhen. But there was one player who I really thought we would go all out on, and that was Fabio Carvalho from Liverpool. I thought when he got recalled, that move would have just made sense for us. But I think I saw something over the weekend or on Friday that we can't guarantee him game time, which is frustrating because if he goes to somewhere like Wolves, I can't see where he's fitting in Gary O'Neill's team. So he's not going to play there as much as he perhaps would with us. But I'm a big fan of Yunus. I know he's not really been given a chance. I'm also a big fan of Cassidy. I don't know. I know that the opinion is very split on him at the moment, but I think he does a job in that number eight with Yunus as backup to him when Ndidi comes back. I'm not fully convinced on Ndidi as a number eight anyway. I think he does okay. But I don't. There's parts of his game where something will happen. I just think someone like a Cassidy there or someone like, or Dewsbury Hall in that position, we probably make the most of it. I think his goals that he scored have kind of hidden them things that he could probably improve on. But in terms of names, Fabio Carvalho is the one I wanted. I don't know whether you want to throw some names and I'll see if I know anything about them.
Well, I mean, we've been linked to that Albert Grombeck at Bodo Glimt. I don't know how much you know about him. He's Norwegian. Well, no, he plays in Norway, but he's from Denmark. Funnily enough, Dean Smith's manager at Charlotte FC now out in the MLS, and they've supposedly bid $9.5 million this weekend for him. So maybe old Dino's had Martin Glover's notebook on Grombeck, and we're going to sadly miss out on that one. But the only other one I was thinking about, and the names just escaped me. Give me a sec. I was thinking maybe Andre Santos, who's come back to Chelsea from Forest, whether that could be, I mean, whether Chelsea would look and say, well, Cassidy's maybe not getting as much football as they'd like, and they'd be competing for the same position. But I was very surprised he didn't get much more football at Forest. They both had blinding under 20 World Cups. I think Cassidy was top scorer, wasn't he? And then I think Santos also got 5 or 6 from central midfield. So I do feel like we need one more in there. But I mean, the last two games, Cassidy, and to a maybe a lesser extent, but still better than what he had done. I thought Yunus has showed some promising signs. So they're going to get a chance, and hopefully they step up.
There's someone who I think, his name's just coming, it's quite ironic actually, because we're talking about QPR, but Elias Chair. I know that we met with him this summer, and he's, I know he's out in, well, he's out with a small injury at the moment, but I don't see why we shouldn't look at getting him in January, because if we go up, we're not going to want to get him, especially if QPR get relegated. I don't think the recruitment team is going to look at someone who's been relegated as someone we're going to need in the Prem. We could probably do with 6 months with us, get him used to Enzo style, and then go in the Prem with him. But he's someone I've been impressed with. I thought we were going to get him in the summer, but he was if I remember right, he was the first player we were linked with, like the first proper player. Yeah. Nothing really came of it. And I think it was like £10 million at the time. And I think the QPR facing going down, I don't know how much they'll want to keep him. But
got a question for you, actually, on QPR. And he will have come through the academy. What's your thoughts on Sinclair Armstrong? So I saw him at the start of the season. He looked unbelievable. He's not gone on to do too much. I think he might have scored at the weekend, actually, did he, in the cup. But, his contract's up in the summer, I spotted as well. So, you know, we need to pick up a couple more young forwards, I think. Do you think he'll make it at that level, or has he still got a fair bit to go?
He's probably got a fair bit of development to grow into. I think I know that he scored the winner against Cardiff in the second game of the season for them. Mm-hmm. He's got a really strong Irish accent. I can remember seeing the video on social media. And he scored a very good goal yesterday against Bournemouth. Got the ball, I think it was on the halfway line, and he just did like a typical Harvey Barnes run, and then scored himself. But I think probably not the sort of player we need. I don't think he's better than Maladie. I don't think he's better than Fatawu. In that number 8, he's a bit like, not quality wise but position wise a bit like Wilfried Saha, can play on the left wing, play down the center as well. So he's certainly someone to keep an eye on, but I wouldn't be surprised if A, QPR keep him, or B, he gets a move to somewhere like a championship team, or maybe an Ipswich or something, if they don't come up. But he's probably one of the most highly rated players in that QPR team. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting, you know, listen to you speak about these number 8s, and I mentioned this to you yesterday, George, that with Ndidi, I'm not convinced that this injury is as bad as what people have suggested. I've got this inkling that he wasn't massively keen on going to AFCON, and it's quite kind of common, isn't it, for African players to get a bit of an injury, and they're suddenly ruled out of the competition, and they're back fit again before the competition's even finished. Now, look, you know, clearly indeed he has got a bit of an injury, but for me, Jordan, I'm not convinced actually we need to go out and get anyone in that position. Now, I know I probably said something different a few weeks ago, but I've admitted I've kind of flipped on Cassidy, whereas before I was happy to say, do you know what, it's just not going to work. I have decided, do you know what, there is a player in there, and there is. And I've been pretty consistent with that, but I am now of the belief that we don't need to go and get anyone this season. For what purpose? Just to because they might be better than Cassidy. We'll still get promoted comfortably with the squad we've got, if indeed he is injured or not. Now, of course, if you can go out there and get someone like Carvalho on loan with view to a permanent, you know, something like that, then by all means go ahead and do it. But to bring in somebody basically just because they're better than what Cassidy is right now, You know, what's to say that person who comes in is good enough for the Premier League? You know, we kind of need to look at the bigger picture here. And I'd rather give Eunice and Cassidy a proper go. And I'm talking, you know, four or five games, you know, starting. Because that's the only way we're going to really, truly see if they've got the capabilities beyond this season to play at the club. I just think, indeed, he'd be back in 6 weeks, probably. Let's just give him a proper go and save a bit of cash. Because we're not flush, are we, by the sounds of things?
No, not from what Enzo said. And it seems, like you say, we've heard this before. I agree with Josh, actually. I like Cassidy. I've stuck up for him the last few weeks. And I like Eunice as well. I actually feel a bit sorry for Eunice because one is he's obviously quite a diminutive figure. Two, he's always in and out the side. And when he is in and out the side, he plays on the right or in the 10. And obviously we know the physicality of the Championship. I'm not saying the Premier League's not physical. I think Eunice might actually be better in the Premier League because he's so technical.
Yeah.
And Cassidy's an interesting one. But yeah, I agree. I think, you know, like you say, we are going to get promoted. And Cassidy probably, you know, if he plays five or six games in a row, will dust off the cobwebs a little bit and he will look absolutely fine. I think, you know, like to Josh's point, the tricky bit for us now is if we sign, you know, like Chair, like you say, was mentioned 6 months ago. Mm. If we were to get someone like him in now, bed him in, ready for next season. Whereas if we wait 6 months, we're going to end up paying twice the price for a player that maybe might not be on our radar or whatever, you know, we might panic or whatever. And we end up spending a lot of money. And I do feel like the broader picture is like why the good thing about us getting relegated was we only got half decent in the first place because we signed players for next to nothing, unearthed a couple of gems and even moved them on for a bigger price and reinvested. You know, it's when we started spending silly money is when it all kind of fell to pieces, really. And yeah, like you said, Jake, there, like Fatu, what is the obligation to buy? Loan with an obligation to buy. I mean, that's a perfect setup because he's played really well. I mean, to me, he's ready for the Prem, and I think Mavididi's ready for the Prem. And I agree with Josh again. I don't think Ndidi is a good enough number eight in the Prem. Mm. But I also think Castay is a good enough number eight in the Championship. So do we go out and sign that midfielder that we want now, or do we wait 6 months? It is a tricky one. I think if you look across the, like what you'd say is the strongest 11, I think seven or eight or nine of them are good enough to play in the Prem. The only two I've got reservations about are Vestergaard, Ndidi in that eight, and possibly a striker. But you're not going to be able to get three players in January that are ready for the Prem next season. Yeah. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, do we need anyone? Possibly an extra body if we get any more injuries, I'd say, but not desperately. I think, like I said, I think Cass can do that.
Yeah, I just think we need to look at the bigger squad. We've mentioned before that the beauty of bringing in players like Fatu and Mavididi and those kind of players this year is that we wouldn't have been able to do that in the Premier League because they were either kind of too raw or too inexperienced. They would have needed too much time. And, you know, it's so hard to kind of put in those youngsters in those situations. We've now got an opportunity here of 12 months to put in players with huge potential, high ceilings, and give them a proper opportunity, which we wouldn't have been able to do in the Premier League. So if you're looking at Cassidy, play him now. Ben Nelson, Will Alves, you know, there's absolutely no reason why these lads can't be on the bench. I mean, if you look at the squads or the teams that the other Championship teams are putting out, I mean, I've just got this feeling that if we named a squad and Ben Nelson and Will Alves were on the bench, people were thinking, oh God, we're so short. You know, we need to go out and sign some players. Well, no, it's a great opportunity for them. We'll get promoted with these players in the squad. And Josh, I just think that, you know, in terms of that academy and young player development, that, you know, now is the time to go out and do it. And with the greatest respects to Ilias Chair, is that he's not that young. And I think if he was Premier League ability, a Premier League club would have signed him already. So I think we kind of just need to look beyond that and potentially, you know, bring in a player like Cassidy or maybe Will Alves.
Yeah, I think you're probably spot on there with Chair. I think there's been a few times this season when we've named two goalkeepers on the bench and there's been no place for like Alves or even Ben Nelson. So I think we've got to start using the kids more because we go up and we find ourselves in a position where we're lurking 17th and we need to win week in week. Like last season, they're not going to get any minutes. So then it will just be a case of going on a loan to what like McAteer did last year, didn't he, to Wimbledon?
Yeah.
Which I don't know if it's obviously worked out for him because he's come back and he's been a better player, but he didn't really play as much as Leicester would have liked. So we'd be in a position where we have to send players out. So I think if it got to January 31st and we didn't sign anyone, I wouldn't be disappointed. I think we've got cover for Pereira. We've got cover for, well, Doyle or Justin. They're both as good as each other, in my opinion. Centre back were fine. Midfield were fine. My only concern is in striker, because obviously Vardy will probably be finished at the end of this season. I'm not overly keen on Iheanacho anymore. I've kind of changed. I think I have to blame this podcast for that, because I was a fan of him before.
It's us Jordan, mate.
Yeah. And I'm a big Patson Daka fan, and slowly leaning towards Tom Cannon now. So I think we're fine. With no more additions, we've still got the best team in the league. But I don't think signing... maybe we don't need to go out and spend millions on a player. The loan market is probably what we should be looking at, because we don't need to gamble on a player. So perhaps someone like Carvalho would have been perfect, like I said earlier. So there's plenty of players out there that, like, even Fabio Fiera at Arsenal, he wouldn't come to Leicester, but he can't get a sniff under Arteta. So why not give him to someone like us, who we're going to play him. He's going to get minutes in England. He's obviously struggled to adapt to England after moving to Portugal. And even, as Rick said, Andrés Santos, he went to Forest, and I actually thought he'd do all right there. But then I think they signed Dominguez and Sangare on deadline day, and he's not played at all. And he's got a point to prove, because Chelsea have spent all this money on him, put him on a big contract, and same with Cassidy. It's quite funny, actually. Last season, I went to watch Leicester under-21s v Chelsea under-21s for work, and Cassidy played for Chelsea, and he was like the tallest player on the pitch. He was so good. And I can only say to my dad, who picked me up, he'll be some player. So when we signed him, my dad was so excited, and he loves him. But my brother is the complete opposite. So we kind of have like a bit of a dispute about that every single time he does something. But yeah, I think I'm in the boat with Jordan. I think we probably don't need to improve the team. Whereas team below us, like Ipswich, have already made two signings, which shows, I think, in my opinion, tells a lot. I know they've lost George Hurst, haven't they? But they haven't signed a striker. So they're probably going to have to do more business. So I think we're in a good position.
Yeah, no, definitely. Look, there's a few bits I still want to kind of touch on before the end of the pod. But lads, I want to do this this new game. If Rick, are you ready to do it? Because I know you're going to be quiz master today.
Yeah, no, I'm ready.
So Josh, we've been playing a game, Who Are You, for the last, what, season and a half. But we've decided, you're very lucky, we're going to do a new game today. But as in kind of keeping theme with this pod, we haven't really planned it particularly well. So it's very ad hoc. We're just going to give it a go. Do you want to stick around for it?
Yeah, this is one of my favourite parts of the podcast, this is.
All right, brilliant. Right, so let's play some music and then we'll explain a little bit more of the rules. But I'd been forgotten, I do. I've been married a long time ago. Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe? It's on loop, isn't it? I'm ready to take this off. Right, so pretty self-explanatory. Does what it says on the tin. Where did you come from? Where did you go? Keith 86 or Keith Miguel, this was his suggestion on Twitter. One of us is going to give you the clues, which are quite simply, where did they come from and where did they go? And then we have got the space of 15 seconds where the music is playing to write down our answers. And when you've got your answer, lads, I'm going to do mine on my notes on my phone, show it up to the screen so we can see there's no cheating and no changing. Rick, you are going to be the inaugural quiz master.
Quiz master. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
As I mentioned earlier, you can be as kind of elusive or as vague or as helpful as you want. You know, if it's a particularly easy player, you know, just go with the two clubs. If it's a more difficult one, you know, you say, for instance, could give us the years in which it happened. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, then we'll try something else next week.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Just to echo what you said, Jake, thank you to Keith Miguel for coming up with it. I'm now going to... Whenever I have a partner, Sam Miguel, I'm going to call it a Keith Miguel in honour of the great man. So, yeah, I'm ready. So, are you, say it and then you're going to play the music, yeah?
So, the moment you finish giving Oh, is Darcy here?
Yeah, Darcy, she's here. He can't see her in the dark. Unbelievable. Can't believe it. Right. Okay.
So the moment you finish giving it, I'm going to play the music, and then we, me, Josh, and Jordan have got 15 seconds.
All right. Okay. So this player we signed in 2005 from Fulham. Initially, we signed him on loan, and he played six games, and then we signed him permanently. And then he stayed with us for 3 years and then left in 2008. Elvis Hammond. Daddy. Who did we sign? I know, I've already gave away who we signed him from, didn't I? Scrap that. I'm going to do a different one. Okay.
Are you being distracted by Darcy?
Yeah, he's unbelievable. Right, let me do another one. Right.
Chaos.
We signed him in...
Rick, just quickly. Rick. You know we've got to guess the player, right?
You can't tell us who it is.
No, I thought we tell you the players, you tell us who we signed him from and who we sold him.
No, you give us the clues. Where did he come from? So Elvis Hammond is Fulham, and then wherever he went afterwards, and then we get to guess Elvis Hammond.
I preferred the game where you actually got to name the club that you signed him from and sold him to. All right. Okay. What does he?
Right,
I'm having a mare here. Help me out.
Do some parenting.
Yeah, right, okay. We signed him in 2003 under Mickey Adams when we returned to the Premier League. He was one of about 500 players.
Yeah, all free transfers.
And then 2 years later, we sold him to Sheffield United, where he made...
We got an answer, Josh. We've got two Keith Gillespies, one John Curtis.
The answer is Keith Gillespie.
Yeah, me and Josh get it. Jordan, mate.
Wrong again.
I mean, in your defence, I've had a mare there. I'm so sorry, boys.
It wasn't perfect, was it? But you know.
No, I thought there might be teething problems.
I actually thought the game was named the club we signed them from. And
yeah, I did. That's why I've got confused. But anyway, it doesn't really matter, does it? We can tweak it.
Yeah, no, I think if you name them where they come from, where they go, then you have to tell who the player is.
Where do you come?
I don't know. So, listeners, pick your way through that. Should we do it the other way around, where we give the player and got to say the clubs, or stick with we give the clubs and you've got to give the player? But Jordan, the luck hasn't changed, mate.
No.
Jordan, out of interest, who did we sign John Curtis from and where did we get rid of him to?
We signed him from Sheffield United. I think that's where I've got confused. I've just had a look.
See, I think we're going for Blackburn and then maybe we bend him off to someone like Sheffield United.
No, we signed him for Blackburn, went on loan to Sheffield United, and then he went to Portsmouth.
Got it. Yeah. Hey, natural already, Jake. And you, Josh.
Yeah. All right, then. So that was the first go at that one. We'll do it again next week, maybe differently.
Have the second go.
Yeah. Right. Still got plenty to talk about. Football-wise, I want to pick out a couple of players from the weekend at Millwall, Josh, and then also chat about Coventry at the weekend. It's a big one. It really is. But I just want to go to Josh quickly on Tom Cannon, because we've mentioned the striking department already, and I think it's an interesting one because we've spoken about it lots. I think we've all completely kind of changed in terms of our order of the four, in terms of now who our favourites are. And I'm a massive fan of Tom Cannon, but I'm really conscious of going overboard in terms of putting too much pressure on the lad, because he has only played a couple of games in terms of starting, and he's obviously looked great in them and scored a couple of really good goals. But yeah, I think the guy's got a pretty high ceiling, you know. And you know, I think Jordan, when we were having some food yesterday, one of the other lads who's not a Leicester fan who watched the game was saying, oh, he won't score goals in the Prem. And again, you know, he's probably getting a bit ahead of himself. But Josh, I think he's got serious potential as Tom Cannon. I like everything about him, to be honest.
Yeah, I think he's got that bit of that arrogance that you need.
Arrogance.
I'm a big fan of I used to find them a bit cringy, you know, in the full time when they record Abdul dancing.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of him, even just going up to the cameras. He sits as boom donor. He's just got a bit of arrogance about him, which I'm a big fan of. I didn't watch the game yesterday, but I watched the extended highlights. And I think he probably could have had more than one. There was that one in the first half when he's turned and shot. I think the keeper saved it. And then the one in the second
half.
Really
good save. Yeah.
Yeah. And the second one when he's kind of beat the defender and he's gone to finesse it with his right foot, and the keepers again made a good save. I think they got given as a goal kick though, somehow. But yeah, so far I've been impressed. He's a sort of, because when we signed him, he kind of came from nowhere, didn't he? And I was thinking, why are we signing players from Everton who I've never heard of? But I kind of got a bit of encouragement from the fact that the club bought him, knowing that he had an injury, let him recover and then bring him in now. Whether he can do it in the Prem, I'm not entirely sure, but he's got all the attributes that you'd want. I know it's very easy to say, but he does remind me a bit of like Vardy in the 2014, the season before we won the league, not when he was scoring goals, the season when we did the greatest game, when he was just running at people. Yeah, so he's got a lot to do to become a Premier League striker, but Enzo's clearly a fan of him. I'm going to be interested to see what he does when he's got all four available. Because my first choice would still be Daka at the moment, although he's just so weak on the ball, isn't he, when he comes to like holding up the ball and defenders coming behind him. Well, I think Cannon's a bit better at that. So yeah, we're well equipped in that position for the first time in years, because normally it's just been Vardy and Iheanacho, and then we've had the odd Slimani, Ejoa, who have had mixed fortune. So yeah, it's encouraging. I'm happy with him so far.
Yeah, and you know, I'm constantly, Jordan, when I'm watching Leicester at the moment, I'm thinking beyond this season. I'm thinking, okay, you know, can you do the job for me right now? Yes. Right, great. Well, what about beyond then? And that will always be my criticism of Daka. And look, you know, I know that lots of people are fans of him, and you know, fine. You know, I think I keep him for sure. But as I was saying earlier, we've got this opportunity with certain players to play them in the Championship, and so they can develop and improve. Now, I think with Cannon, let's give him a go as the first choice striker. Now, look, in 2 months' time, right, if he's not really scored many goals, then we can say, okay, you know, maybe Daka is the better striker. But again, you know, you're going off a much smaller kind of window of games here. So as I said, I'm kind of very hesitant to go overboard too much in terms of the praise. But, you know, the movement's good. The finishing's good. He's very confident. He's quick. He looks like he's got a high ceiling. And, you know, if you're in the Premier League and you want to go sign a striker that's going to score you, what, 15 Premier League goals, that's going to cost you upwards of 20 million quid. And it's something we've not been particularly good at over the years of spending, you know, a large amount of money on a striker. I think that, you know, considering we've already seen Daka in the Premier League and it wasn't a roaring success, again, you know, he could well be better, you know, for an extra year in the Championship and scoring goals there. But I'm really excited to see what Cannon can do. And I'm hoping that Enzo has seen enough in the last two games to give him a continued run as the main striker.
Yeah, I think so. He should have had a penalty yesterday as well. That was
mad, wasn't it?
But yeah, like Josh says, I like Daka as well. But, you know, you look at Cannon when he comes deep, he's a big guy, physical, very strong, can hold the ball up. He looks to me like he's just a natural finisher. He likes to take any sort of half opportunity to shoot. He gets a shot off. He looks like he'd be pretty good in the air. I don't think we've really seen him too much in the air. And he's fairly quick. I'm struggling to see a weakness. He looks like a really complete striker. And I think what's interesting, yesterday we were having this discussion about, you know, if you go up into the Prem, you say, oh, he's not going to score loads of goals. And I know Leicester are a complete anomaly worldwide anyway, but when we come up, we had Vardy, Nugent, Kramaric, who's a decent player, but just never Wood. Suited as Wood or Chris yep. Woods, as everyone calls him. who, by the way, Chris Wood now, quality player. I mean, his goal at St. James's Park the other week, he can't do that. Ojoa, Tamani's not great, but again, if we decided when we come up for 5 million, he'd probably say he was half decent, because he costs so much. But what we were saying yesterday is we are so quick to write off strikers, particularly English strikers, in the Premier League, and they don't seem to mature until mid to late 20s. So Kane went on loan at various Football League clubs, scored a hatful of goals, and look what he's gone on to achieve. You think they're probably the second best English striker, Ollie Watkins, again, gone from Exeter to Brentford. I used to go and watch Brentford at Griffin Park a lot. Watkins actually played out wide. Now he's down the middle, looks like the complete striker. And a great example is Dominic Solanke, who... I'm not saying we should sign him, but he's the kind of player that I think if we went up would be where we should target. Someone like Solanke, who, I mean, they're going to charge silly money, but we're a big club. We've got bigger ambitions, could probably pay him more. But someone like him, he's had to work really hard. And this season just looks like a top, top striker. And like Solanke for me would be ahead of someone like Callum Wilson. Again, probably the fourth best English striker at the minute, gone into the Football League, scored a bagful of goals in the Football League. And to be fair to Wilson, he's done it in the Prem. And I don't see why Cannon can't do what all four of those strikers have done. And he's only 21 and he's not played any first-team football for a prolonged period of time. He was on loan last season at Preston and he's coming to the team and he looks quality. So if we go up, well, when we go up, like you say, Jake, I'd play him. I'd stick with him now. And then if we go up, we might need to spend 30, 40 million on a striker. Well, why don't we give Cannon 10 games and 15 games and see what he looks like in the Prem? Because to me, like I say, I don't really see a weakness there. And I think he can score. You know, a return of 10 goals in the Premier League for a striker, especially for a team coming up, that'd be pretty decent.
Solid, yeah.
Yeah. I think he could get 10 next season.
Mm. Rick, what do you think?
I'm trying not to get too excited, but I think he's mustard. I don't see a weakness, which it's really surprised me. Actually, I didn't know a lot about him. Saw what he'd done at Preston last season. And he reminded me very much watching the highlights of a David Nugent. I don't think he is a Nugent type player. He's a bit more flexible than perhaps Nugent. He's got it all. He's not massively tall, but he looks like he carries himself and will. It's like he's got longer legs than the rest of his body, but which is good because that seems to give him a gait that, and you know, I wouldn't necessarily say he's explosively quick, but he's quick enough to get away. I think he's not Harry Kane, but you know, you look at Harry Kane's game and he's not exceptional at any one thing, but what he's very good at is almost everything. And naturally very good at finishing. What I like about Cannon's finishing is he shoots on sight and he seemingly doesn't hesitate on anything, whether it's a shot, whether he gets on the ball and looks up and runs with it or plays it off immediately. We haven't had that with a striker. I like Dakar as well, but Dakar on the ball is so indecisive. He doesn't know whether to run with it, what to do with it. And that there's a stark difference there. And there's a player here who has barely played any senior football. So he's only going to improve in that regard. So I think he's got a run of games now because Dakar's going to be away for the next month at least. And Vardy doesn't seem to be back anytime soon. And Iheanacho's going as well next week. So, and also potentially injured. So I think he'll get games. And if he carries on putting a few away, by the time they all come back and are fully fit, Enzo's proven that he will give the player that's doing the business there and then every chance. And that's the other thing, you know, Iheanacho and Vardy now, if they are third and fourth choice, they can't complain that they've not been given chances because in the first half of the season, Dakar and then when Cannon was back fit, they were told they had to wait. And, you know, Dakar wasn't even on the bench half the time. And yet both of them have come in and scored goals in an environment that's not easy when they know they're not going to get many chances. So, yeah, echo everything you say. I think he can go up and, well, you know, he might not go up and immediately be devastating, but I think he's got that in his game that, like Jordan said, you know, Watkins took a little bit of time when he went up and is now brilliant. Solanke's took a number of years. I don't think players really get that amount of time to any one club to come, you know, to come good. But he is doing so. It shows that you do have to have a little bit of patience and faith. But yeah, really like him. I read a stat as well. He's had 12 shots now in 2 starts and 5 sub appearances. And yeah, if you look at them, there's, I wouldn't say many of those chances are poor. You know, there's been a couple of good saves, a couple of unlucky ones. So yeah, I'm really, really promising.
Yeah, no, again, I think we're all echoing each other, excited by the ceiling of Tom Cannon. Right, lads, just a chat now about the upcoming games before we wrap up. And Josh, I'll come to you again, mate. So it's Coventry at the weekend and then Ipswich at home. So 2 big games, of course, for similar reasons, really. I mean, a month or so ago, you know, the Coventry game was just big because of who they are. But, you know, they're a team who have been massively improving over the kind of the recent months, and you know, having to go to their place. And it looks like it's a sellout. I think they're opening up some new stands, especially for us. But Josh, it looks like it's going to be a big one and, you know, a genuine test. But I'll be honest, I'm pretty confident of going there and picking up a result like I am for pretty much every game at the moment.
Yeah, I think we'll win the next 2. And it's weird to say that because you look at them on paper, Coventry should be a difficult game because they've done all right. I think I went to their game against Plymouth at the start of December. It was before we played Plymouth and they were awful and they won 1-0. And I can remember saying, yeah, these 2 teams will be shocking come the end of the season. And since then, they've won nearly every game.
Yeah,
I think that's coincided with is it Callum O'Hare coming back, who is a really good player. He's someone who I'd like to see at Leicester. But
contract up in the summer as well, Josh. Actually, that maybe we test the water this month. They'd go wild, wouldn't they, if we did that?
I think because I know that my dad and I know that a lot of older Leicester fans don't like Coventry. I've never really had a thing against them. I think that we've never played them when I've been watching us. So I don't really get the whole rivalry. I know that we don't like them, but compared to, like, I don't know about yourself. I'm not saying you 3 are all older than me in terms of fans, but you get what I mean. I think we'll win on Saturday. I'm more confident now than I would have been a few weeks ago. And the Ipswich game, after seeing them against us and how poor they've been since, I think we should. The only thing I think that we could struggle with at home, and I think it happens every game, is if Cassidy or Dewsbury Hall don't pass forward, you get moans around the stadium. And I think in a game like that, when we lose and people start asking questions, it'll just give them a much needed lift. I don't think we need fans. I still can't believe that we're, what, 20 something games in, we're top of the league, breaking records, and we've still got some fans who like to moan. I know that you lot have spoke about it before. So I like to think we'll win the next 2. I know that the Swansea game is going to get moved now for an FA Cup game. So we'd be nice to get a nice run going for the end of January, February. So then we get to March and think promotion's near enough there. I don't know, but Saturday is on the TV, isn't it? So we should win.
Yeah. I mean, Jordan, I mean, atmosphere is something we've spoken about so much. But I mean, these 2 games away at Cov and at home to Ipswich, particularly the Ipswich game now being an evening game, which I do think actually helps with the atmosphere. But you know, that atmosphere, was it 4,500 our allocation at Coventry, and obviously sold out. And I'll be honest, I know quite a few Leicester fans who haven't been able to get a ticket, and they've got in the home end for it. So I think there's going to be quite a lot more than 4,500. And we've really relished those games, haven't we? With a, you know, a packed out away end. I wouldn't say kind of, you know, raucous atmosphere as such, or, you know, but yeah, I just feel like we've flourished in these games really well. And, you know, maybe I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, or, you know, but I'm confident. I am. I really can't see us losing. I'm dead excited for it.
No, I don't think we'll lose. Coventry made me laugh because I've just done a quick glance at the table. They're only 3 points off the playoffs, but they've won 9 games out of 26.
Yeah, but I think literally 8 of them have been in the last 10 or something. They were so poor. And that, again, I've not looked at the form table, so you've probably got a better idea, but I'm pretty confident in saying they are one of the form sides in the division.
Yeah, yeah, they are. But it says all about this league that you're eighth and you've won 9 out of 26 games. Mm. And they gave us a bit of trouble on the opening day, but, you know, so they should, because it was a bit of an unknown. It was a complete 50-50, you know, what the Leicester team was going to be like. We had a new manager, new players, and, you know, they had a good spell. But, you know, they've lost Hamer. Like Josh said, at O'Hare, I've only seen him play once this season, and he scored two, and he looked decent. But I think we've learned our lesson signing players from Coventry. But he looked decent. But we'll beat him. Like, you know, you say they're selling out and they're opening up a new stand or whatever. Well, like you just said, there's Leicester fans in there. Yeah. So that just sums them up. And they'll all turn up for their cup final against us and go on about it. They're just irrelevant. They are complete irrelevant club. You know, did you see this tweet? Baker was bang on. I saw him quote tweeted it. And this sap Cov fan said that he wouldn't change supporting Cov for the years that they've had. What are you on about, mate? What are you on about? We've won everything, gone on the piss in Europe, and you're pissing about at Birmingham City's ground. You know, they're an embarrassment. They are an embarrassment. And as for the guy who was having a go at Rick about the elephant on the opening day, it's just another game. It's just another game. We'll beat them, and then we'll beat it, but you know.
That's fighting talk, Rick.
I mean, I cannot stand Coventry. So where I'm from, Burbage Hinckley, I'm very close to the Warwickshire border. Best friends are a shitter fan. And yeah, I'm nervous for it because I was nervous first game of the season and it, you know, we got it done and hopefully we'll get it done on Saturday as well. But in the last 10 games, they're third in the form table. We're top, obviously. We've still got 5 more points better than them over the last 10 games. But, you know, they're doing all right. It's a credit to them for that. Robbins has changed from a back 5 to a back 4. O'Hare's made a big difference. And I think that Haji Wright started to do well. And they've got a little Japanese winger who's very good. Sakamoto, I think his name is. He yeah. does look good, to be fair. So we will need to be mindful of that. They are strong from set pieces as well, which is our nemesis at the minute. So, and they scored a set piece against us on the opening game, didn't they? I think Doyle and Vestergaard got done by...
We've not mentioned the stat, by the way, Rick, for set pieces. You had to pop off. So let's throw that in.
Yeah, so I read yesterday. I mean, I'm presuming it's a second-hand quote rather than I've gone and sorted it from an official source. But apparently 44% of our goals that we've conceded this season are from set pieces. Now, you can look at that a few ways, can't you? Because sometimes those percentages are misleading. We've only conceded about 18 in the league or whatever. But you should not be conceding sort of 8-9 from set pieces or halfway through the season, not when you're as strong as we are. And apparently we're like of the top 8, we're the worst at defending set pieces in that regard. So we can't deny that it's a weakness. And Maresca's referenced it. He said it after the game yesterday. So anything that we've struggled with this season, he's gone away usually in an international break and fixed it, hasn't he? We came back from the last international break and we're now scoring freely, whereas prior to you know, the Leeds, Middlesbrough, before that, we were struggling for goals and we've come back, probably helped with Ian Acho being out and Daka and then Cannon being in, but we're scoring more goals. So hopefully at some point you can rectify that. We're not a small team anymore like we were under Brendan, or, you know, there's a little bit more height in there with Vestergaard and, you know, Doyle's now back. He's taller than Justin if he starts. But he's been done for a few corners, hasn't he, prior to his injury. So, yeah, a little bit of a concern there. But quietly confident for Saturday. They're actually better away from home, I think. In this 10-game run, they've still managed 3 draws at home, I think. And I think they've won. I mean, they beat Middlesbrough away, Sunderland away. Drew at Elland Road. So, yeah, I'm glad that they're not coming to ours again and it's more and on their cup final. I mean, I think you may have mentioned it. They're opened up a cinema where they're giving away free bloody crisps and drinks to the nippers for so you can watch the game on. It's incredible. But, yeah, fair play to them. It's their cup final, isn't it?
The only club ever, Rick, to beam back a home game.
I mean, it takes you back to, we did a few beanbags, didn't we, in the 90s? But yeah, usually it'd be an away game and it'd be at our home ground that do it. So yeah, very, very niche this is. Yeah, don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, no, it's certainly caused some banter and raised some eyebrows, hasn't it, for sure. But as I said, look, I'm really am looking forward to it, just hoping, of course, that it's a positive result, but confident I am. Right, lads, I think we're at the any other business stage of the podcast. Josh, just want to say thank you so much for coming on today. Generally really enjoyed the insight into the academy, and yeah, if there's anything that you want to bring up, talk about, mention, now's the time to do it, mate.
You put me on the spot.
No, you don't have to have anything, mate. It's you, just usually Jordan.
Before I came on the podcast, I saw there was a Coventry fan who posted a photo of a Coventry shirt saying he was leaving this top until Wembley in May, but he's decided he's going to wear it on Saturday. I don't know if any of you guys have seen that. There's a few Cov fans in the replies who have gone mental about it, saying how good it is and shows dedication and all that. It's just like, yeah.
Yeah, obviously Jordan and Rick are big fans of Coventry. Jordan, any other business, mate? What have you got for us this week?
I don't actually have any. Well, I've had my moan about the FA Cup.
You've had a couple.
I felt like I've been in a bit of a spiky mood today.
You've had to assume the role of Jack this week.
Yeah, that was it. I've got any other business. So Jack's obviously he's not made it today. So I just want to wish him good luck on BBC Radio Nottingham and his new role.
Brilliant.
Yeah, he deserved that. I think that's fair enough. Rick, any other business, mate?
Well, I mean, I sadly had to dash off, didn't I, when you just started the Millwall coverage and before Josh came on. But I just want to say how pleased I was with Ben Nelson's performance yesterday, because it's been a long time coming. I've been raving about him since he first sort of came on the scene and got on the bench 2 or 3 years ago. But I really thought he had a very good game, and he can play any of those positions across the back three, left, centre, half. I mean, I think it was his manager at Doncaster last season that said he didn't know whether he's better on his left or right. He's literally the definition of both footed, and he played him left of the three. So hopefully he'll get a few more games. But then Doyle's back, which will be a difficult one to oust. But yeah, really good to see. And obviously I missed what Josh was saying about the academy, but he's going to be down there tomorrow. I'll be interested to get your thoughts on Logan Briggs, because he's come back and he's a very, very talented attacking midfielder for Leicester, very much in the same mould as Will Alves, who may also be playing tomorrow, but I think he might still be returning to fitness. But yeah, the academy, although I've given it criticism over the years, because I feel like we could be better with Seagrave. You know, it's the showpiece. We should be getting anyone who's worth their salt from the Midlands in. But we do still develop players, and it was good to see more yesterday. So yeah, long may that continue.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right then, lads. Well, thank you very much indeed. Josh, once again, thank you. So Josh Holland from Football London, Academy Scout at QPR as well. So a massive week as we look ahead to the game against Coventry. And hopefully Jack joins us next week. And hopefully we'll do Where Did You Come From? Where Did You Go Again? And we might do it a little bit better. But once again, thank you for listening. Always very much appreciated.
Podcast Network.